Welcome to Channel 9 of the STRY Radio Network, where stories live.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Season 6, Episode 4 of the Ninth Story Podcast. I'm Immortal Alexander.
And I'm Jeanette Andromeda, and in today's episode, we are discussing how can NaNoWriMo help you?
To help us answer this question is author and NaNoWriMo participant Brian LaTondra. Welcome, Brian.
Thanks for having me. I'm very excited to be here today.
I'm so excited to have
in
you
the
on,
virtual
too.
Space. It's like a virtual couch.
Welcome to our virtual couch, Brian.
Yes, in reality, I'm sitting in a creaky office chair, so I'm going to try and keep it as balanced as possible. But I'm super excited to talk to you guys, first of all, but also to talk about NaNoWriMo, which I am a passionate evangelist of.
And that's actually when we came up with this question, because we wanted to participate in NaNoWriMo, which I will explain in a second, guys, don't worry. You were literally the first person who popped into my head, because back when we met you at Connecticut Horror Fest, I don't know, 2 years ago, a year ago, something like that, I bought a copy of your book, which was Courting the King in Yellow, and found out it was a NaNoWriMo product, basically. And I was just like, oh my God, this is so good. You wrote that in a month? And my jaw hit the floor, and now I'm gonna ask the question.
No, I'm gonna ask it, and you're gonna answer,
okay.
And it's gonna be great.
So, transition nailed.
So, what is NaNoWriMo?
National Novel Writing Month. NaNoWriMo. Now you understand. It's a writing challenge where participants work towards a goal of writing 50,000 words of a novel in 30 days. Ideally, to finish a whole novel in 30 days. So starting November 1st and going until November 30th at 11:59 p.m., everybody joins in, goes on the website, logs their word counts, and tries to complete this. And we brought on Brian because Brian has done this.
And how long has this been going on, this NaNoWriMo thing that we did not start, that somebody else started?
No, this is somebody else.
This
has been going on since 1999, actually. Did you know that, Brian?
I did. I read, it's Chris Batty, I believe, who is the founder of NaNoWriMo. Mm-hmm. I might be wrong about that, but he wrote a book called No Plot, No Problem, which, ooh, if you are getting into NaNoWriMo for the first time, is a great read. Because if I remember correctly, and I have a copy of it here somewhere, it's basically like something you read while you're doing NaNoWriMo. Mm-hmm. And it kind of like is a pep talk, coach you along the way, don't, you know, sweat it as you go along sort of book. And it's really, really good. And I read it the first time I did NaNoWriMo and I loved it.
Nice. So with the first time you did NaNoWriMo, I can't honestly, I apologize. I can't remember if you had said you had finished it that first time, or did you like participate, not quite get it, and then finish your story later?
Well, what happened initially is I think it was 2007 was the first time that I ever did NaNoWriMo. And I ended up doing it, I think, for a lot of the same reasons that other people, when they first discover it, are like, I should do that. And it's because, you know, almost everybody that you will ever meet who is would consider themselves creative at all will say, man, I have this great idea for a book, or I have, mm-hmm, you know, I've got, everybody thinks that they have one, at least one novel in them, right? And so, but to actually write it is kind of an overwhelming thought. And so NaNoWriMo is a good sort of way to rip the Band-Aid off. And if you think about it in terms of a way of getting a first draft of a project done, it can be one of the greatest experiences that you'll ever go through. And the first time I did it in 2007, I actually did hit my 50,000 word mark by the end of the month.
Nice.
And the great thing about NaNoWriMo is it doesn't cost anything to do. There's no penalty if you don't hit your word count. It's sort of this mentality of everybody doing it, especially now with Twitter, of like, we're all in this together. There's a million people who are writing the same time as you are. There's always someone any hour of the night that you can jump online and have a conversation with in the forums or on Twitter. And so it's this great sort of team mentality of like, we're all doing this month. And it's very empowering when you're sort of working on it. And even if you don't hit 50,000 words, even if you come out with 20,000 words or 30,000 words, that's 30,000 words that you didn't have a month ago on a project that you've been wanting to write forever. or this idea that you've been wanting to start to flesh out. And so to me, there is no downside to getting involved with NaNoWriMo. And it was a great experience the first time I went through it. When I finished, I think at the time, and they do this every NaNoWriMo, there are sort of winner's goodies, right? So mm-hmm. you win and you can get a certificate or a code for 50% off of a word processing program like Scrivener. Or you can get a membership for a month to this thing. And one of the things one year was you could get a free proof of your book cool. from CreateSpace. And so when I finished the month and I had my draft of my book, I went on to CreateSpace and I plugged it in and I got a proof copy of my book. And then I didn't do anything with it for like almost 5 years. Mm-hmm. I got the print copy. I put it on my shelf. I, you know, looked at it every once in a while, and it was under a completely different title mm-hmm. than According to King in Yellow. But it wasn't until I want to say, and I actually pulled up my NaNoWriMo page because it keeps track of your previous projects. I think it was 2011. So it was 4 years later that I decided to do NaNoWriMo a second time because I had an idea for another book. But I said to myself, I'm not going to put this book out until I do something with my first book. And mm-hmm. so that's when I really took the first book and took that first draft and really went back at it and started to hammer it out and make it into what eventually would be According to King in Yellow. And so it really took that second idea for me to go back to the first idea and say, I wrote it and that's good, but now I want to finish it and put it out there for other people to actually read. And so that was a big moment for me in 2011 when I decided to do that. And so, and I think that the book, According to King in Yellow, I think it came out in 2012. So that was really, and then once I had done that, then I was kind of locked in. And after that, I did NaNoWriMo in 2013, in 2014, in 2015, in 2016. And I also do the Camp NaNoWriMo events, which are smaller events
nice.
That happen in April and July, where you can shoot for a lower word count. And it's not the 50,000 word thing. So I actually suggest to people, like, if you're worried about it or if you're stressing about it, like, you can always try the April or the July Camp NaNoWriMo events, because you could say, oh, I want to write 20,000 words this month, and they have, and you can plug that in and use their, you know, metrics on their page and stuff like that to follow that. And so it's a way of sort of dipping your toe in if you're freaking out about doing the November thing. But no one should freak out about the November thing. Like, again, there is no penalty. There is, you're setting a goal for yourself and you're doing your best to reach it. And either way, you're going to come out of that month with words written.
So how many people participate in NaNoWriMo, Jeanette?
So the metrics that I found on NaNoWriMo's website, NaNoWriMo.org, I believe, in 2015, which was actually the year that I tried it the first time, there were over 400,000 participants and 926 people who volunteered to be municipal liaisons, which is basically like the head honcho in the little area. So everybody who's in the area has someone to talk to. And there were 1,000 libraries, bookstores, and community centers, which all said, hey guys, you're doing NaNoWriMo? Come do a write-in. Be cool. And Camp NaNoWriMo, which Brian was just talking about, had 57,000 campers. Like, there are thousands of people wanting to write and diving into this challenge, which I find incredibly exciting and, I don't know, empowering almost. It's like, how can I not do this? Everybody else is doing it. I want to be a cool kid.
It is super empowering. Like, that's the thing that I love about it the most, is that writing can be a very isolating experience, right? Mm-hmm. Because you're, you know, especially nowadays where like half of my friends don't even live in this part of the country. And so I, you know, I have a lot of friends who live in California. We're not always writing at the same time. In fact, my writing partner, Jolene Haley, who I write with a couple of different series with now, she lives in California. So there's times where we're not even writing at the same time of day. But the cool thing about the NaNoWriMo events is there is always someone writing during a NaNoWriMo event. Like always. And so if you need someone to talk to, if you just want to hop on Twitter, and a lot of times you'll see people talk about, well, let's do a sprint together. So, mm-hmm. okay, from 8:15 to 8:45, you and I are going to sprint together and we'll check back in a half an hour and see how we did. And so there's this constant sort of reinforcement of like, okay, well, we're in two separate places, but we are writing at the same time, and we're going to use that to sort of motivate us to get as much done in the next half hour as we can. And so you'll see that just constantly. So it's almost like anytime you want to jump in, there's someone doing something that is more than happy to, you know, have you be a part of that group. And there's actual Twitter accounts, not just the NaNoWriMo accounts, but there are accounts that you'll see around that time of the NaNoWriMo events that are all about doing word sprints and doing, you know, write-ins and stuff like that. And so it's really, you can totally get caught up in the hype and the sort of really empowering and inspirational vibe of that, which is one of the things that I love most about NaNoWriMo. Mm-hmm. Because it's kind of a time where you feel like we're all in this together.
And that's why I really enjoy being on Twitter as well, and like doing these like little writing challenges, all this kind of stuff that constantly gets me excited about writing with other folks.
Oh, for sure. Like I will tell you that everything that has happened since that original 2007 NaNoWriMo event, like all of my writing friends, my partnership with Jolene, all of that stuff is because of NaNoWriMo.
Wow.
Like without NaNoWriMo, none of that stuff would have happened, because I would have never written my first draft. I would have never gone through the whole self-publishing process. I would have never come back and done it again. I would have never considered myself a writer. And I wouldn't have done it. And then I would never have joined, like I'm part of a blog called the Midnight Society now. Mm-hmm. With a bunch of writer friends. And we hang out. Like tomorrow we're doing a live tweet of Nightmare on Elm Street. And, you know, like we do all these events, and and it's a constant sort of like year round NaNoWriMo group that we're always kind of encouraging each other. But many of those people I met through NaNoWriMo. I met Jolene around NaNoWriMo because I do a writing podcast myself, and I invited her on my podcast to talk about getting prepped for, I think it was a Camp NaNoWriMo event. Mm-hmm. And in our discussion, we hit it off so well during that podcast interview that we decided to write together. And so in 2015, we put out our first book, which is called Harrowed. It's the first entry in the Woodsview Murder series. And it's a YA series that is basically, you know, Scream meets Friday the 13th sort of thing. It's our love letter to slasher movies. Mm-hmm. But that all came from a discussion that we had like off the air when we were recording this podcast about getting ready for Camp NaNoWriMo. And so NaNoWriMo is woven into everything that I've done with my writing. And that is something that I will always have this love for NaNoWriMo because of that.
That is so flooring. Like, I'm extra, extra glad that we asked you on today, because I knew you were doing NaNoWriMo, and because of the Midnight Society, I knew you were actively involved in the community, but I had no idea how involved. And that's just so exciting to hear, and just inspiring also, because it's like, oh my God, it really is exactly what I thought it was.
It totally is. And the cool thing, and I wish they would do this for the NaNoWriMo event, is that the camp events are even more fun, because not only can you do a lesser word count goal, like if you want to work on short stories, or if you want to, basically when you do NaNoWriMo, if you're doing something other than writing a novel, like if you're writing a book of poetry, or if you're mm-hmm. writing a collection of short stories, you're technically considered to be what they call a NaNoWrebel. And that's a legit thing, like on the forums and stuff like that. They'll have forum threads for NaNoWrebels. It's basically people who are using NaNoMonth to do something other than write their 50,000-word novel.
Nice.
Well, the cool thing is, at the Camp NaNoWriMo events, it's all, like, everybody can be a rebel. And it's, like, part of the process. And so you can say, I think it's anything more than 10,000, you can set your word count goal. So you can say, I'm going to do 20, 30, 40,000. I'm going to work on short stories. I'm going to work on poetry. And it's kind of all cool as part of NaNoWriMo, Camp NaNoWriMo. And the other cool thing about Camp NaNoWriMo is they do what they call cabins, which are a private message board for up to 12 people.
Nice.
Who are all in a writing group together for the month. And you can have them throw you into a random group, or you can choose to set up a cabin yourself. And so for the past at least 3 years now, I or Jolene will set up a cabin for Camp NaNo, and we do like themes. Like this time around for the July Camp NaNoWriMo, we did, I did like 80s music. And so every day I was posting links to videos of hair metal songs and like just motivational, like, you know, 80s rock and metal songs every single morning. Like that would be the wake up call for the writers in the cabin. That's another awesome. Time I did like writing questions. Mm-hmm. So every day before we started, I said, if anybody has questions that they'd love to throw out to the group, send them to me. I'll put them in a list and every day we'll post a new question. And so we would post a question in the group every day about, you know, how do you approach creating your characters, or do you put your real world locations and stuff like that into your books and things? And so with those, we try to just have fun with them because the cabin feature really lets you create this almost like house party environment, and mm-hmm. you can keep the mood real light over the month. And really, and it's the summertime too. So like the Camp Nano events to me have a completely different feel in that way than the Nano proper. Mm-hmm. But they're each awesome in their own way.
That is so cool. And since we've been mentioning your book, Courting the King in Yellow, could you kind of give our audience just a little blurb about what that book is about?
Sure. Courting the King in Yellow is the first book in my Parted Veil series. And the first book is kind of a standalone story. It's a shared universe, if you will. But they're modern stories that are set in the Western Massachusetts area that have connections to Robert Chambers, the King in Yellow, and also some of Lovecraft's works, particularly his Dreamland stuff. And so in the first book, which is Courting the King in Yellow, it is a story about four friends who figure out that the pharmaceutical company that moves into Springfield, Massachusetts, which is where, you know, I'm from this area, the pharmaceutical company that moves into town, who is seen as like this savior who's bringing jobs in and is helping the local economy and stuff like that, that they are up to no good and are actually a front for a cult that worships the King in Yellow. And so when these four people discover that, of course, that puts them, you know, in a bad spot, and then bad things happen after that. And so it's sort of, it's a self-contained story. Books two and three are featuring sort of a new cast that comes in. But that first book is very much a love letter to the movies of John Carpenter and The King in Yellow. That's sort of the mishmash in that first book. And I kind of wear my influences on my sleeve. So it's pretty easy to see for anybody that has either enjoyed Carpenter's movies or has read The King in Yellow.
And that's actually really cool because I actually got to go see John Carpenter live, where he was performing a bunch of his scores from his films with his son in New York, and that was really, really, really cool. I actually bought like a signed LP for our friend's wedding when they got married. I bought it like last year when I went to the show, and then I just presented it to them as part of the wedding gifts.
That is awesome, because I know he just put out a new album, and mm-hmm. he's touring, I think, now, because I just saw somebody post about getting tickets again. But yes, he is not only my favorite director of all time, but one of my favorite musicians of all time. And his score, his sort of style is kind of always playing in my head 24 hours a day. Like that's just, I can't even think about the amount of times that I've been listening to soundtracks from his movies while I was writing. That's permanently embedded in my brain.
Having read your books, I can hear it. Like it just shines right through. I love it. And if anyone hasn't read your books yet, which may be the case, go buy them. They're amazing. Literally the reason I started doing NaNoWriMo a couple of years ago. And I was like, oh, after that conversation, I wanted to.
So you mentioned that you did, was it 2015 you said was the first time that you did it? So
how did that go? First and only time I've tried it until this year. I'm going to try it again. It didn't go great. I think I got to 6,000 words. But for me, that was kind of a big deal because I have started over and over on things multiple times, and I will only ever get to maybe a few thousand words like I did, but then I get stuck in the editing loop, which I did on this one as well. So this year I'm going in with an outline. I'm going in with the determination to let it be sloppy. If I need to rewrite something, then I add another chapter rewriting it. But I'm not really allowing myself to edit this time. I just have to barrel through.
And that kind of is the secret to, it's not even a secret. I mean, if you read Chris's book, like that's the thing about NaNoWriMo is that when you have to write 2,000 words a day, there is no time to edit. Mm-hmm. And so what I think is wonderful about the NaNoWriMo events is that the emphasis is on one thing and one thing only, and that is writing. And so there, you're not worried about making mistakes. You're not worried about editing it. You're not worried about this thing that you forgot to add. You're not worried about typos. You're not worried about any of that stuff. You are just writing, 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 writing. And really, you don't pick your head back up until 30 days later, mm-hmm. when it's like, then you celebrate the fact that you worked really hard for that month, and then you come back later and you start editing it. And so in some cases, years later, like my first book was. But the idea that it is just unfettered creativity because you do not have time to edit, or you will start to derail yourself. And I think, yep. for a lot of people that do NaNoWriMo, it doesn't take the first time because of that, right? Because you have to kind of break yourself of that habit, because for many of us, and I was the same way, we want everything to be perfect. And yeah. so everything that we've ever written, whether it be a short story or a novel or a poem or whatever, you are second guessing yourself all the time. You're constantly trying to perfect each word. You're trying to perfect each paragraph. And that ends up getting in the way of actually finishing stuff. And so what NaNoWriMo does is kind of in a 30-day period, it's like going on like some sort of crazy cleanse diet or something like that. Like you are basically signing up to do a inner editor cleanse for 30 days. Like you don't have time to edit. And so you just have to shut that part of your brain off and write. And that's really helpful, because once you've done that for that 30 days, it's kind of a skill you then have. And so when you do your next project, or when you have to work on something really hard for 2 weeks, like you can start to get into that mode because you've learned that over a month. But it wasn't a skill that I had. It was something I had to learn. And I only learned it because it was necessary to get through the month. You know, the idea of not hitting my word count goal caused me more anxiety than the idea of not having a sentence be perfect. And so by the time I, you know, reached the end of the month, I had hit my word count and I had a mess of a draft, but I had a draft. Mm-hmm. And that's great, because, and again, whether it's 6,000 words or 10,000 or 40,000 words, it's something to build on.
Yeah.
And you've already got your foot in the door, which is awesome.
And Brian, why did you choose to attempt NaNoWriMo in the first place?
It was really because I couldn't think. I had never been able to put myself down and make myself write the book that I wanted to write. And I, you know, for doing a comic book podcast for years and years and years, and I used to write a web comic years ago, I had a lot of ideas that I initially wanted to do as comic books. And what I realized is that me having no artistic talent whatsoever, that was a barrier for me, because it meant that if I had ideas, I couldn't make those ideas come to fruition on my own. And there were ideas that I felt like, I want this to be visually represented. I want to do this as a comic. But there were other ideas where I was like, you know what, that would make a great story or a great book. And I'm going to do it as prose, because it's the only way that I will have control over when it gets done and how it gets done and that kind of stuff. And so it was really, you know, kind of realizing that I wasn't going to be a comic book writer, that I was going to be a prose writer, that made me say, okay, so where do I start? And then I started hearing about NaNoWriMo and learning about NaNoWriMo. And I was like, you know what, that seems like a thing I want to try, because if I can at least just get that first draft done and go through that once, I think it will change things for me. And in a way it did, because I had the draft done, but I didn't do anything with it right away. So I didn't all of a sudden, you know, dive headfirst into writing. It was kind of like something that when I came back around the second time, that's when it really took. And so I haven't really looked back from the second time. But the first time it was really because I was like, if I'm going to do this, this seems like the vehicle that will get me closest to where I want to be in a period of time that, if I just make the commitment and bite the bullet, I think I can do it. And so, and there was the challenge aspect of it too, because I'm a gamer, a lifelong gamer. And the idea that you have this sort of progress bar that shows, you know, where you're at towards your word count goal and stuff like that, like the challenge seemed really cool to me too. And so once I did it, I was like, oh, I love this. This is great.
So how do you remember how you first heard about it?
I'm going to guess that I heard about it on a podcast. Only because I am constantly listening to podcasts, mm-hmm. and I have over the years listened to different writing podcasts and stuff like that. So I'm going to guess that that's probably where it was, is I probably heard about it on a podcast, and then decided to take a stab at it. And again, finding out that it's free, mm-hmm. that I sign up and I just create an account and I put my idea out there and there's all these other people doing it. I was like, yeah, this seems like that would work really well for me. So, but I don't remember specifically, but I'm going to guess it was a podcast.
Nice.
And Brian, when attempting to write Courting the King in Yellow for NaNoWriMo, did you write an outline before you started, or you just kind of jump in with just kind of like a hinkling of an idea where you, what you wanted to write?
I was definitely a pantser the first time around. And so when you hear people talk about NaNoWriMo, they talk about pantsing versus plotting. And obviously plotting being you have an outline, you have a better idea going in. Pantsing, you just go by the seat of your pants and you just, whatever happens, happens. And so I went into that book with some, I often refer to myself as like a signposter. Like, mm-hmm. I don't do a full outline. I have events that I know that I want to have happen in the book, but they're just like signposts. So if I have, you know, 7 or 8 or 9 signposts along the way, they're just events or character moments that I know I want to have happen. And how I get there and where I go after there is completely up to whatever's happening, you know, at that time in the story. And so, yeah, I had no outline whatsoever going into Courting the King in Yellow. I've tried to outline a little bit here and there as I've gone on. As the series has gone on, I've had to at least have more of like my story Bible, if you will, that reminds me of events that I have to keep track of, or things that have already happened previously in the series. And so it gets more complicated to be a pantser as you go in a series that is supposed to be connected. So so I've become a little bit more of an outliner. And when Jolene and I write together, we talk a lot back and forth. We use Google Docs. And so we'll leave a lot of comments for each other, because she's often writing late at night when I'm already in bed, and I'm writing early in the morning before she's even gotten up. And so there's a lot of back and forth in the document itself about where we're going and what we're doing. And we do outline more heavily for projects that we're working on together. So I can outline, and I've done outlining, but for a lot of my stuff, it's kind of like, I have an idea of the beginning. I have some stuff that I want to sprinkle in the middle, and I sometimes have an idea of where the book's going to end. And then I just go. And for me, like, that is super fun. Mm-hmm.
So as someone who had a hard time getting through NaNoWriMo the first time going through it, I am wondering, what kind of things did you do to stay on track?
Well, I think it gets, when I first did it, like, I wasn't, it's not that Twitter didn't exist when I think it existed. When did Twitter come about? Because 2007 was when I did the original one. Maybe it didn't exist at the time. In any case, I was not on Twitter. Mm-hmm. So I was not big into, that was not a distraction for me at that time. I think it's much more complicated now because of Twitter, because that's the number one distraction, I think, of everybody everywhere. Yeah. And so it's hard to shut that off, especially when there are writer friends of yours that you might want to be sort of pep talking each other around and stuff like that. So I think that the biggest challenge is finding that balance of having a routine where you know that you're going to make time for your writing every day. And for me, I live on the East Coast, so that's how it factors into what Jolene and I do, because she's West Coast. But I have found that getting up in the morning, and I usually get up around 5 before the rest of my family wakes up, mm-hmm. there is a solid hour of time in the morning where the house is quiet. And so I will get up and I will do my writing in the morning, knowing that any other writing time I get throughout the day is just bonus time. But that's the one time that I can kind of control. And I'm a morning person, but I wasn't that early of a morning person when I first started writing. I had to, like, get in the habit of getting up early. And in some ways, that means going to bed earlier, too. And mm-hmm. so there was changes I had to make in order to create that time for myself. But I would definitely say that I think even more important than an outline for your story is having kind of a time that you know that you're going to be able to write every day. And so if you know that that's at 10 o'clock at night and you're still alert and creatively ready to go at 10 o'clock at night, then that's your time, right? And so anytime you can sneak in between them is a bonus. but you know you're going to have that time every day. And then the ability to be resilient and bounce back from days that you get derailed. Stuff's going to happen over the course of the month. It's in November, so we got Thanksgiving in November. Mm-hmm. Like, there's always something that comes up during the month. You know, you have obligations sometimes on the weekends. And so, you know, there are days where you're going to want to get ahead, and there are days where you're going to have to be playing catch up. And so just understanding that ahead of time and not letting yourself fall too far behind that you have to do like an 8,000 word day, because then it starts to snowball against you.
Mm-hmm.
I think in the opposite way, if you can get through the first couple weeks of NaNoWriMo and you're writing, I think it's 1,667 words a day is the exact number that you have to write in order to be able to hit your word count goal. But I always think of it as 2,000 in my head.
Yeah.
Because then you've got that cushion, right? So I'm always shooting for 2,000 words a day. And if you go through 2 weeks of that, you have 14,000 words. Once you start to have that amount of words pile up, there will be a momentum that it starts to take on of its own, and you will find it easier and easier to hit those word count goals. And then, you know, you probably heard before that they say like it takes 21 days to form a new habit. Mm-hmm. Like by the time you get 3/4 of the way through the month, if you're in the practice of spending a certain amount of time a day writing or getting a certain amount of words done a day, then that starts to actually become your habit. And so that's a cool byproduct of NaNoWriMo, is that even if you don't hit 2,000 words a day, if you start training yourself to write for an hour a day or 45 minutes a day or an hour and a half a day, by the time you do that for a month, that's now part of your routine. And so because of that, it is now, it's a habit. And you've already now accomplished something else coming out of the other end of the month. And so I think just really trying to get through the first couple weeks, build up that word count, get that momentum going, and then that will start to feed itself after a while. You know, I think it feels to me like the hardest week is week two, because week mm-hmm. one, you're all fired up, right? You're totally ready to go. Everybody's writing. Everybody's excited about it. You know, 7 days, no big deal. And then you start to get into week two.
Yep.
And if you're like me and you don't have an outline, then that's when you start going like, what the hell am I doing here? Like, what? This story is not going anywhere near where I thought it would go. Mm-hmm. And you sort of have those moments of, oh my God, should I start over? Like, or does this idea suck? Like, I don't even know. Like, you start to doubt yourself. And mm-hmm. so if you can push through that and get to the end of week two, then you start to, again, get into a new space where you're like, okay, I've got 14,000 words under me now, and we've established some stuff here. And even though I wasn't planning on it, these three plot threads have now shown themselves. And so I can explore either one of those, or I can go in this direction. And so if you don't worry too much about making sure that every dot is connected and all that kind of stuff is there, then you can continue to push through and let the momentum start to take you. And then when you start editing, that's when you can go back and connect all that stuff and mm-hmm. add in that extra scene that makes those two things make sense now or something like that. So, but yeah, that's the toughest thing, is staying off of social media when you need to be productive, not letting it distract you, and then getting into that daily writing routine. I think those are kind of the keys to being able to build up that work count.
Speaking of habits, were there any habits, friendships, et cetera, that stuck with you after your first NaNoWriMo?
The habits, definitely. It was really when I got back into the second one that the friendships really started to, start to come together. But the mm-hmm. first one, it was all about the habits, right? So I had never written anything that long in my entire life. I had never written that many days in a row in my entire life. I didn't even know that I could write a book. And so coming out of that, for the things that stuck with me, is like, this is less about some magical talent that makes one person a writer and doesn't make one person a writer. And it's more about just putting in the work. And like, it kind of demystifies writing in a way. And I've seen some people dump on NaNoWriMo sometimes about like, oh, you know, it teaches people to write crappy and all that kind of stuff. And I don't believe that at all. First of all, my writing will always have an element of crap to it, because my foundation is B horror movies. Like, that's what I grew up on. And so I wear that like a badge of honor. Like that's sometimes characters are going to do dumb things. And sometimes, you know, monsters are going to be, you know, gross and tentacled and, you know, that kind of stuff. And sometimes there's going to be mad cultists running around. And that's like, so to me, I've never been kind of snobby about my the stuff that I read or the stuff that I watch. So to me, it's all entertainment. And so, so yeah, I mean, as far as stuff that stuck with me, it's been more about the confidence to be able to say, oh, I can be a writer if I just make myself write, you know, and the editing and the polish and stuff like that comes later. But it's really about, can you create a time and create a habit where you are writing regularly? Because it's like that whole runner's high thing. And mm-hmm. I don't really know what that feels like because I hate running. I've done like the Couch to 5K program before. Like I tried. I really mm-hmm. tried to get into running. My wife is, likes jogging. I hate it. I hate everything about exercise. So, but I understand that people talk about this thing where you've been running for a period of time and then it ceases to be difficult. You reach a place where you're sort of in the zone. And you know, I think we've all experienced that at some different point in our lives with different things. And I do feel like there is a point where writing a lot of words in a reasonable amount of time does not feel as difficult as it once did. And so that's what writing every single day for a month can start to do. It can start to help you build up those, that sort of muscle memory of being able to do that. And that's really why my thing that I kind of suggest to people too, is that you can use the Camp Nano events to train. It's almost like going to camp for 2 weeks to train for November. You know, you go in April, maybe your goal is 20,000 words and you hit that. And then you go into July and maybe your goal is 40,000 words and you hit that. And so you're sort of building up that amount of words that you're writing on a daily basis. And then when you come to November, 2,000 words does not sound like the most crazy, insane amount of words that anyone's ever written in their entire life. It sounds like a little bit more than you've already been doing. And so that sort of thing, I think, can sort of stick with you. But yeah, to me, it was all about the confidence that stuck with me out of that, of like, oh, my writing may not be that great, but I can write words and I can do this if I keep sort of working at it. And again, but even with that, I didn't come back to that for a while. It's not like I wasn't writing. I was doing some comic stuff and I was doing other things and obviously a lot with the podcasting, and I was a games journalist for a couple of years and stuff like that. But I was pulled back to writing fiction at some point, and I sort of pushed that other stuff to the side to return to really trying to make a go of it, like around 2011.
I, as one of your readers, I'm very glad you took that path.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And I'm the worst at like talking about my own stuff, because being a podcaster like you guys are, I always want to talk to other people about their stuff. Mm-hmm. And so when people, if I go to, like, I'm doing Connecticut Horror Fest this week, I forget that I'm even there selling books. I'm just like, people come by, they have a cool t-shirt. We talk about their t-shirt for 25 minutes. Mm-hmm. Someone comes by, we talk about our favorite movies for a half an hour, or we talk about bands or concerts or whatever. I'm awful at marketing my stuff. I'm just not good at talking about my own stuff. I can tell you what all the influences were, and I can tell you a little bit about the story, but I'm really bad at like telling people that I actually have books to sell and that they should check them out and stuff like that. And so,
well, thank goodness. Later on in our season, we're actually going to be tackling that topic.
And I do listen to a lot of podcasts now about, like, when I listen to writing podcasts, I listen to them for the marketing stuff, because I'm like, that's the piece for me that is the magical piece. Like Jolene, my writing partner, she's so much better at that stuff than I am. Like planning out the cover reveal and planning out the blog tour and stuff like that. Like I don't do any of that stuff for my own individual novels, but she is so good at that stuff. I learned so much from her, just kind of working with her for the past few years. So yeah, but again, another thing that came out of NaNoWriMo. So you end up connecting with people through NaNoWriMo that have different skill sets than you, and maybe even write in different genres, or, you know, like she was much more into a young adult than I was. And so I had never even considered writing a young adult book until I started talking to Jolene, and we were like, oh, we should do a YA slasher thing, because there's not a ton of great YA horror out there. So let's do that. And so that is where that project came from. So, you know, the connections, the ideas, the good habits in terms of being able to just kind of focus and get writing done, like all that stuff, to me, I have NaNoWriMo to thank for.
I think it's beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. Sorry, I'm talking not into the microphone. I think it's beautiful. Absolutely beautiful.
It's worth saying twice.
So, when we were researching you, we found this amazing article written by your writing partner, Jolene Haley, and she had some really cool writing tips about writing a horror novel for NaNoWriMo. So, Alex and I were going to summarize this and then add a link to this post in the description for this show. So anyone who wants to read that post can go check it out. So go ahead, Alex.
So Jolene made a list of the five things you need to prepare for NaNoWriMo if you are writing a horror novel.
So the first advice she gave was write what scares you. And it's so simple. It's just like write what scares you. That makes sense. For me, that would be someone living in the walls of my house, because that's just, for whatever reason, what absolutely terrifies me.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the second she wrote is Kill Your Darlings. She was talking about the first couple of books that she wrote had these characters where she was just protecting them like a mama bird and like not letting anything bad happen to them, and they were really boring and they never got published. So her first book that she actually published, she killed a lot of big characters in her book. And so that creates tension and makes people maybe want the reader want revenge for those people that died, and wants it kind of drives them forward and keeps them reading and keeps them turning the page.
I have a good story about that I will interject just really quickly.
Please do.
When we wrote Harrowed, which is the first book in our series, and the second, we're working on the second one now, and hopefully it will be out this year. The second book is called Haunted, but it's the Woodsview Murder series. And so I made Jolene put that to the test, because there is a character in our book, and I wish I had saved the comments from the Google Doc that we worked in as we went, because as the story went along, even though we had a good idea of what we thought was going to happen, we were very open to who the killer was going to be in this book, and also who was going to die and who was going to live. And so there were decisions that were made late in the game. And one of them, Jolene still holds a grudge to this day against me for. And so I'll have to remind her of that, of this article that you pulled up, the next time that she yells at me for this particular decision that we made in the book, because it was one that I was really pushing for. And she went along with, and it worked out great. But it was one of those things where people who have read the book really react to that.
Nice.
And so that's a difficult one, is to kill your darlings. Like I still struggle with that with my own books today, of like, who is going to get it? Because in horror, there's going to be death, and like, you don't want to just kill the extras on set that were hired for the afternoon, because there's no weight to that, right? And so you have to make people care about the characters, and then some of those characters are going to suffer and perhaps even not make it through that story. And so I think horror really makes you play with that and makes you think about that. And that's one of the things that I love about that. So, but please continue with the list.
And Jeanette still doesn't, it's not forgiven me for killing a ham sandwich in the game, Kittens in a Blender.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah, it's like
ham sandwiches are very endearing.
Well, it's the name of the cat. All the cats have derpy names in this card game called Kittens in a Blender, and I killed ham sandwich, and she has never forgiven me for
that. You'll never live with that.
No. Mostly because I really like the idea of just constantly telling him, "I'll never forgive you. You killed ham sandwich."
Right. Yeah. No, that's a great pet name.
Right. So number three on her list is anything is possible. And she was talking about those dumb ideas that pop into your head, like, oh yeah, if someone lives in the walls of my house, then obviously there has to be room in crawl spaces or something. And actually, there was an episode of the No Sleep podcast which had me crawling out of my skin recently about that exact thing. Anything is possible. Those dumb ideas are actually great ideas, because those are the ones someone else threw away and didn't write.
Well, and the crazier they are, the better story that they make for, right?
I mean, oh, heck yeah.
Those are my favorite ideas to try to figure out, like, okay, how can we incorporate that into the story? And I also think when you're talking about horror, there is this, audiences are more willing to go along with you.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of expected to be part of the ride when you're getting into a horror story, right?
Oh, totally. like, if everything's normal and goes along normally, you're really disappointed by a horror story. Like, where's the werewolf? Where's right. Where's the totally. Serial killer living under the floorboards? I'm disappointed.
Exactly. And her number four on that list that she wrote was, read some of the greatest horror books out there, especially if there's something that has a tone or a verbiage or something that you really kind of like the way they build their world or some of the way they build their characters or their characters interact. You just kind of steal from the best. Mm-hmm. Take some interesting ideas or concepts or just style from some of the best that's out there. Read those things while you're coming up with your concept or writing your book, because it's going to help you kind of get invigorated and excited about what you're writing.
Yeah, totally. And I would add to that, and Jolene knows this about me for sure, movies, right? Yes. So so much of my writing, my writing is pretty much 90% influenced by, well, maybe not 90, let's say 75% influenced by movies, 25% influenced by books. I grew up on 80s horror, all of it. And so my brain is just a constant beef stew of like 80s horror movies and references. Case in point, there is Tom Atkins is going to be at the Connecticut Horror Fest this weekend.
Yeah.
And he is probably one of, if not my favorite, like B-movie actor of all time. There is a character in Harrowed who is a detective by the name of Ray Atkins, who is based on the Ray Cameron character that Tom played in Night of the Creeps, the nice. Detective character. And so because that character, I just loved it. And I love him. And I've loved everything that he's been in. And so it was my way of, you know, paying tribute to him is to have this character that is sort of a nod to his name and a nod to this character that he played. And yeah, so that's how I think, is that like Jolene is a voracious reader. And I mean, I read a ton too, but Jolene is a voracious reader. And so she has just so many different places to pull from and she reads a ton of YA as well and really knows that genre well, but also reads a ton of adult horror and just so she's got that, and then I've got this like almost stupid encyclopedic knowledge of, you know, 80s horror movies, and so the two of those things together is just like this constant brainstorming of like, yeah, this and this and this, and then it'll be this and we'll add this, and so it works really well for us,
just like peanut butter and jelly.
That's right,
totally.
Peanut butter and horror movies. It's a yep. win-win. And then the last thing on her list was something you've already talked about. And I guess it'll eventually get through my brain. And I'm hoping it'll work this time for me. You can revise later. Just get it done.
Man. And I'm probably going to misquote this, but a quote I've been thinking about a lot lately is perfect is the enemy of done. Mm-hmm. And so, and if it's not, it's something like that. But basically just the notion that, you know, we want something to be perfect. But then, like, I look back at the 4 years that I wasted without putting that book out because I was so caught up in, like, what it was going to take to edit it and all this kind of stuff and things like that. But, you know, at some point I realized that all the movies that I grew up watching, none of them were perfect. Like, none of those movies. Well, you could make an argument that The Thing is perfect, but outside of that, like, and maybe Halloween, the first one, but outside of that, like, there's almost every horror movie that we grew up watching is flawed, right? Yeah. Some of them are like horribly flawed, mm-hmm. but in some ways that makes you love them even more. Mm-hmm. So this idea that like we have to have every single word be perfect in this story that we're trying to tell, to me, is almost, depending on what genre you're writing and what sort of feel that you're going for, like, for me to be so influenced by 80s horror movies and then to try to be this perfectionist, like, it doesn't make sense. Those two things are incongruous to me. So like, I want people to pick up a book of mine and feel like they just watched a movie that they picked up at the video store, you know? And sometimes it'll be like, wow, man, that really surprised me. That was really good. And sometimes it'll be like, yeah, I could take it or leave it. Or sometimes it'll be like, I can't believe he freaking had this crazy cult do this. Like, that was so stupid or whatever. Like, because that's the way you would react to those movies when you watch them in the 80s. And so
yeah, definitely.
You know, that's kind of the vibe that I go for. But yeah, the perfectionist piece is really, especially early in the process, it just gets in the way. And so if you can just find a way to stifle that and just let your creative side go. That's really, really helpful. And all those things that you just mentioned from the article that Jolene wrote, the reason that Jolene and I are even friends and even started talking was because I used to follow her on Twitter. Mm-hmm. She used to do a site with a friend of hers that was called Pen and Muse. And that site had a ton of great articles and writing resources for people on everything from editing to character development to plotting to getting to know your characters better. And so I used to, you know, like absorb those resources all the time and read these posts that she was putting up on the website. And that led me to ask her if she would come on my podcast so I could interview her about getting ready for NaNoWriMo. Mm-hmm. And that was the beginning of what then became a partnership for us. And so that, again, was really that without NaNoWriMo and without, you know, the awesome stuff that she did. And if you ever talk to Jillian, you'll realize that she is one of the most positive people that you'll ever meet. And she's such a cheerleader for everybody else. And mm-hmm. So she's like exactly the type of person that you want to be around when you're doing NaNoWriMo, because she's just always like, go you, you're awesome. Keep doing that thing you're doing. Like, that idea sounds awesome. Like, which in some ways, like, we're the worst pairing ever because we just enable each other all the time. Like, you know, literally whatever the idea is, like, she'll be like, okay, so what if we kill this person and then this person shows up and comes out of, yeah, that sounds great. And then 2 minutes later, okay, well, what if we do this, this, and this? Yeah, totally. That sounds awesome. And so, like, there's no, in our partnership, there's like no person that says no. Like, there's no one that's like, no, that's ridiculous. You can't do that. For us, it's like, yeah, okay, but maybe that doesn't fit for this book, but we'll do a whole other book about that. That'll be great.
It's like so improv, you know, that's that like, you can't really say no, you know.
We have a folder, a whole folder in Google Drive that just has books. We have enough books for the next 15 years that the two of us have already started to, like, somewhat plot out and think about and stuff like that. And so, but that's cool and it's inspiring. And she's always kind of making me think of new ideas and inspiring me to just put them somewhere and not forget about them so that we can come back and visit them. And the other cool thing that she does, which you should check out on her website, is she does these writer and artist showcases. And so once or twice a year, she'll have a theme that she puts out. And this summer, the theme was the Summer of Screams, and all of the theme was around camp. And nice. So she has a bunch of writers and artists who submit either pieces of artwork or short stories that tie into the theme of camp. And so I wrote one for this event, and all the stories go up on her website for free, which is jolenehaley.com. And I'll send you guys a link to that. But that's a really cool thing too, because through those events, you end up meeting people on Twitter that also participated in those events. And then you make more connections, you know, and you have other people that you can write with now and stuff like that. And so that kind of mentality, I think, is one of those things that NaNoWriMo creates, is that you're on Twitter, you're seeing these other people are doing Nano, you might strike up a conversation with someone, you end up chatting about the stories that you're writing, and then now you become friends, and then you find yourself part of a larger group of friends. And then now you have all these people who are all trying to figure it out, just like we all are, and write good stories and get their work out there and get people into it. And so you just start to develop this group of people around you that is empowering you to write the stories you want to write and put time into your craft and all that kind of stuff. And to me, that's kind of the foundation of NaNoWriMo. So it's a great place to start for people who want to really make a go of it, I think.
And Brian, what advice can you give to someone who's attempting NaNoWriMo for the first time?
Alex.
What's that?
It's his first
time.
Oh,
yeah. It is going to be my first time.
I'm excited.
Do I get like a little cake with like a number one on it?
I'll make you a cake with a number one.
You have to make it yourself. Yeah, but you do get one. Everyone should get a cake. Well, I mean, I would say other than the stuff that Jolene just mentioned, I mean, I think that go into Camp NaNoWriMo with just or NaNoWriMo proper with just the idea that this is about you spending time every day writing, and don't let everything else put that pressure on you. Don't, you know, having this is something that wasn't in the outline, or this plot point that I thought of isn't working out the way that I thought it was going to, like, just push through that stuff. Let the story go in another direction, then add a different scene here, build off of that, and, you know, understand that even if you go in with a great outline, you're going to deviate from that outline. Mm-hmm. And so some people feel really good about being prepared before they go in, and that's great, but also don't let that handcuff you. Like, just do whatever you have to do to push through and write. And really, you just get to the point where the story kind of takes over, and you sort of go from there and enjoy it. Like, there is this kind of anxiety around getting the words written every single day, but don't let that get in the way of the joy of the fact that all these thousands of people are also doing this. So take time to connect with other people that are doing it. You know, go on the NaNoWriMo forums, which are great. I mean, there's forums for everything that you could possibly think of. There's forums where people will help you think of character names. There's forums where you can go and post this story problem that you're having with your plot, and people will give you suggestions. There's, you know, places where people are posting links to resources. You guys mentioned the, you know, like the regional moderators. Like, those people are sort of trying to connect people in a given geographical area and schedule things like write-ins, where you can go like, okay, next Saturday, at the Starbucks in such and such a town, we're going to meet at 8 a.m. and we're going to write till 5. And so everybody bring your laptop and we'll meet there. And there's a lot of businesses who are really cool about that, especially during NaNoWriMo, and they welcome that, and they'll, you know, they'll make space for you, or like you mentioned, the libraries and stuff like that. And so check in with your regional board and just see what's going on in your area. And can you go and meet any of those people? You might find out that you're surrounded by writers that you end up becoming good friends with, or that they have a writing group that meets once a month or something like that. And so soak in like all of those cool connected aspects of NaNoWriMo, because, you know, the writing is the thing that you're focusing on, but there's so many other cool things about that too. And that's the stuff that can lead to like the partnership that Jolene and I had, like that, all of that stuff kind of can flow from that. So
Brian, what are you currently working on, and where can people find more about you and your books?
So my blog, which is very sort of shabby looking, but it is a good place to find out about what I'm doing. My blog is cbrianwright.com. And so I try to, there's always a list of my current books that are on that blog and links where you can get them and stuff like that. In general, all of my stuff is on Amazon, and you can also get print copies of most of my stuff through Drive-Thru Fiction, where you can order sort of print-on-demand stuff, and they do a really nice job. They use the same place that Amazon does for their books, and so the quality is really, really good. A novella that is the sequel to Courting the King in Yellow, because as I mentioned before, when Courting the King in Yellow came out, it was sort of a standalone story. The second book in the series is called Lovecraft's Curse. And that book and the third one, which is called Lovecraft's Pupil, pick up with a new cast. There is characters that connect those stories, and they have a larger connection in terms of the overall plot, but it's sort of a new cast. And so this novella, Chasing the King in Yellow, is sort of showing you some of what the cast of the first book has been up to since the end of that story. Because as this series goes on, the casts of that original story and the current books are all coming together as the story sort of starts to come together. So this is sort of the sequel to Courting the King in Yellow, that just sort of catches you up on one of the adventures that group has been on since the events of that book. And so I'm excited about that, because it was revisiting those characters that I haven't had a chance to write you know, more robust stuff lately, because I've been working with these other characters. So that is going to be debuting in print at Connecticut Horror Fest, and then I'm going to release that digitally probably in October, and I'm looking at Friday the 13th to do that.
Nice.
Because that feels like that would be a good day to do that. And also, Jolene and I are working on edits for the second book in the Woodsview Murder series, which is Haunted, and that is hopefully going to be out before the end of the year. There's a slim chance it could be out before the end of October, which would be totally awesome. Mm-hmm. But that will definitely be out, you know, sometime in the near future. And so we have that series that her and I are working on together. And then I already have the first draft of the next novel in the Parted Veil series that I am going to be diving into edits for. And that will be coming out sometime in 2018. And then a ton of short story stuff. And one of the things I love about the events that Jolene does for her showcases is that it forces me to write short stories, mm-hmm. which is really good for me, because I love short stories. My favorite works of Stephen King are his short stories. My favorite works of Clive Barker are his short stories. And so and obviously Lovecraft in Chambers, but I don't write enough of them because I'm always focused on these bigger book projects. So I did put together a book of short stories last year called Intrusive Thoughts, and I'm working on the second volume of that as I write short stories now. So that may also come out in 2018, but the next release is Chasing the King in Yellow.
Nice. And actually, I think this episode's actually going to be airing. You're going to be I think you're kicking off October. I believe this is going to be the first October episode.
Perfect. Well, then that book will be coming out this month.
So in order to find all these links and links to the books that Brian has been talking about and everything about NaNoWriMo, you'll find that all in the show notes on podcast.ninthstory.com/S6E04. So season 6, episode 4. And yeah, there's going to be a lot of information there, including everything we've talked about. So Brian, thank you so much for talking to us today. I feel a lot less intimidated about NaNoWriMo and more excited about diving into it.
Most definitely.
I will happily be a cheerleader for the two of you for the entire month of NaNoWriMo. So anytime that you guys need someone to be hey, keep going, or you're awesome and all that, just let me know. Just hit me up on Twitter. I'll be happy to cheerlead for you, because everybody should do NaNoWriMo. It's just super fun.
We'll have to do a fall bungalow instead of I don't know.
I actually ended up doing a Facebook group because, and it's called the NaNoWriMo Cabin of Awesomeness, because we wanted to keep the cabin feel going in November. And I'm hoping that eventually they're just going to just make that a year round thing, where whatever event you do, you can do the cabin thing, because it's really awesome.
Yeah, the cabin thing just sounds I don't know, it just adds another layer of fun and really capitalizes on, I think, a big part of why NaNoWriMo's turned into such a big deal. It's the other writers you're hanging out with.
Totally.
They should have somebody on the outside of the group pretending to be Jason Voorhees, kind of banging on the window of the cabin.
Digitally.
Right,
banging
if Jason
window.
Lives stalking around the cabin and looking in the window. Yeah.
Exactly.
If you drop below this word count, I'm coming in.
Exactly. Well, it's funny you mentioned that. There are programs out there, and a lot of people will use Scrivener, because you can set a progress bar in Scrivener, or this is how many words I want to get written during this session. But there are actual programs out there that will erase your words if you fall below a certain level of productivity.
Oh, that's
so if you want
terrifying.
To live really dangerously and really force yourself to focus, there are ways of doing that. But I could never bring myself to do that, because I would just be terrified about losing work that I've already.
I'd just end up writing on something else. I can't do it. It's going to kill everything.
Right. But if you're ever looking for that, that is out there.
Oh, I would just start writing gibberish at the end there.
Yeah.
And then the unicorn showed up and it gored everyone to death. Oh, wait, this is Cabin in the Woods now.
But see,
yay!
That's good, because it's teaching you not to worry about editing, right? You just if I don't write, it's all going to disappear. So I'm just going to keep going as fast as I can.
Yeah. Wow. Maybe that is what I need.
Well, thank you so much, Brian, for coming on and joining us and helping to educate us and inspire us. And yeah, thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having me. And I really wish you both the best of luck in your NaNoWriMo this year.
Thank you. I'm feeling I'm really excited about it. That first year was definitely tough. I jumped into it not the first week, I think, was part of my problem. It was week 2.5. And I was I don't know, let's see how far I can get.
This is the year.
I'm determined. I have a podcast. I've told people I'm doing it. There's accountability in place.
That's actually in the book. He says, tell people about it, because then you're sort of put yourself out there about it, and then you kind of have to stick to it.
Thank you guys so much for listening. And if you have more questions, you can find a lot of resources on our website, like we mentioned, or you can just ask us questions over on Twitter. We are at Ninth Story Podcast.
If you like this show, please leave us a rating and review on iTunes. It really helps other people find our show, and also lets us know what you think of what we're doing here.
And for the question of the day, I want to phrase these less around random and more around writing. And one thing that Brian asked in this episode that I really, really want to hear from you guys is, do you write places you know into the things you're writing? Because that fascinates me. Tweet at us. Let us know.
Thank you so much for listening. Until next time, keep writing or the clowns will eat you.
Keep writing or the clowns will eat you. Keep writing or the clowns will eat you. Okay, bye. Skype isn't ready. There we go.
Hello. Welcome to Skypecall testing service.
Hello.
After the beep, please record a message.
Okay.
Afterwards, your message will be played back to you.
I just called to say hi, Brian.
Hi, Brian. See, Brian Wright.
I just called to say hi, Brian.
Hi, Brian. See, Brian.
Okay. Great.